Hey guys, I'm your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to this week's episode of Kowabana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. This crazy year is coming to an end, and I don't know about you, but it has certainly been both a fast year and a long year. I released several new books this year, including the first volumes of Kaihan, Bizarre Crimes That Shook Japan, and Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries. And this podcast has also gone from strength to strength, gaining new listeners with pretty much every episode. It really warms my heart that you guys are enjoying the show, so thank you for sticking around, and I hope it has provided some entertainment during these strange and often dark times. As we're nearing the end of the year, I thought we'd take a look at some of the stories Japanese readers enjoyed throughout 2020. These stories weren't necessarily posted this year, but they were often at the top of reader rankings throughout the year. To kick things off, we're heading into a drugstore with some patients who need help with something not necessarily medical. Find out what in At the Drugstore. Medical care sits at the threshold between life and death. In particular, the amount of strange happenings in hospitals is endless. Unfortunately, this story isn't set in a hospital. It took place in the town drugstore next to the hospital. The star of this story is Ueno-san, an alias, the pharmacist who worked there. It happened as the rush of patients had calmed down and she was putting away some of the picture books the children had been reading. She happened to hear some footsteps nearby. When she looked over, she saw a girl she recognized looking at the shelf full of children's picture books. She had been in a few days earlier with cold symptoms to get some medicine. If she remembered correctly, the girl had really taken to a book about mazes and refused to put it down, greatly troubling her mother. "Ah, maybe she's gotten better and she wants to know how the book ends," she thought, and handed the girl the book in question with a smile. She sat down on a chair and immersed herself in it. "Where's her mother?" Ueno-san wondered. Yet another patient came into the store, so she returned to her work. As she handed this patient their medicine, she noticed an old man standing near the little girl. He grinned with his whole face as he looked down at her. "Ah, so she's here with her grandfather, I see." Ueno-san figured she'd be done with the picture book before long, but then the little girl glanced up at her and suddenly took off running outside. A few days later, a single patient entered the drugstore as Ueno-san was getting ready to close up for the night. It was an old woman she hadn't seen for a while, a regular customer who always smiled as she rambled and told incoherent stories. Perhaps she had finally been discharged from the hospital. She went straight to the counter and stared at Ueno-san. "Is she still not feeling well?" she wondered. "How are you feeling?" she asked, making light conversation. "I bet your friends are missing you right now." Yet the woman didn't reply. She just continued to stare at Ueno-san with that emotionless expression on her face. As Ueno-san looked over the old woman's shoulder, she gulped in surprise. When had he come in? A young man stood behind her, looking fondly at the woman, smiling with his entire face. His teeth were unnaturally white. "Is he her carer?" she wondered. "Where is your prescription today?" she asked, managing to hide her surprise, but then the old lady sadly started making her way towards the exit. Then, as she was about to leave, she turned around. "I thought you, of all people, would be able to help me." With that, she disappeared. The grinning man followed her, a smile still on his face. Although something about the situation didn't feel right, She was still glad that one of the patients she had gotten to know had gotten out of the hospital. Ueno-san went into the back to speak to one of the senior pharmacists. "I just saw the old lady. Looks like she's out of the hospital now. I'm so glad." "What? Oh no. No, no." The senior pharmacist was also the old woman's acquaintance, so Ueno-san found her reaction incredibly odd. Confused, she took the newspaper the older woman handed her. "Look, here." She pointed to information about a wake and funeral. It was the old woman's name. "Ueno-san, you always listened so warmly to her stories, so she no doubt came to say goodbye." So said the elderly pharmacist, but Ueno-san couldn't get the old woman's final words out of her head. They didn't seem like a goodbye. Time passed, and as she was putting the picture books away, like always, Ueno-san noticed something. She reached out and picked up the maze book. It was the book the little girl had been reading. She flicked through the pages and suddenly let out a small scream. Something had been scratched into the final page of the book with a nail. "Please help me." Ueno-san later discovered that when she had seen the little girl reading the book, she was already dead. She had died the day before. So, who on earth were those smiling people? What did the little girl and the old woman want help from? Everyone, you should also be careful when you meet your acquaintances. If you happen to see someone smiling with their whole face next to them, then your acquaintance may already no longer be of this world. And they might be coming to you for help. This next story is a quick one, but it certainly has impact. At the end of his rope, a man decides to end it all, but right before he attempts to go through with it, the sight of something familiar drags him screaming back to reality. Find out what in Let's Jump. This is a story about when I planned to kill myself. 8 years ago, I was subject to workplace bullying and, at the same time, I decided to throw it all away. I put my suicide note and my will in my wallet, and then I climbed to the top of an old apartment building with lax security. I'd also drunk quite a bit beforehand, so I was in oddly high spirits, like, "Yeah, let's jump!" And when I went to throw myself over the edge, I saw it. Someone had beaten me to the punch. But there was something strange about them. This person had the exact same hairstyle and clothes as me. But the clothes I was wearing weren't ever for sale, so there's no way that person could have been wearing the exact same ones. In an instant, my desire to fly to this new land, the land of the other side, instantly dissipated. Someone jumped before me. "No, something strange here," I thought, and I looked closer. The person's limbs were bent at odd angles and their backbone jutted out. Not to mention their brains. At any rate, the person was in a terrible state. And the smell. It smelled like blood, but it also smelled like something burning. There was no way I should have been able to smell that from the top of the building. "That's me. Several minutes from now," I suddenly thought. "If I'm gonna look like that, there's no way I'm going through with it," I thought and rushed home. "You're home! You just made it, huh?" my mum said when I got back and patted me on the head. She seemed to know something, but she didn't say a word. The workplace bullying suddenly stopped after that. Things started going well, and I even made friends at work too. After a while, I resigned amicably. Yet, to this day, I still don't know the truth behind that dead body that jumped before me. That me. But thanks to seeing that body, I decided that I could live for a little bit longer. Like many countries around the world, it's not uncommon in Japan to see a bunch of flowers on the side of the road where an accident has occurred, usually alongside some drinks and snacks as well. Yet the students in this next story spot something else there as well. Something that seems to follow them home. Find out what in Red Backpack. This is a story I heard from my friends in university. Our university was way out in the countryside, and there weren't really many places nearby to have fun. As such, the majority of students had cars, and one of the things we did for fun was head out on drives together. On this particular night, my friends went for a drive through the mountains in the neighbouring town. I was working at the time, so I didn't join them. They weren't going there to race or anything, just to enjoy the night view from the top of the mountain and share a drink or two. There were no problems on the way up, but the same couldn't be said for on the way back down. They'd run out of drinks, so when they spotted a vending machine, they stopped on the side of the road to grab some cans of coffee. It was then that they noticed something on the road in front of them. There were no street lights, so it was too dark to see what it was from where they were. As they got closer, they realized it was a bunch of flowers and some cans of drink. Oh my. I didn't see this on our way up, though. Just in case, everyone put their hands together in silent prayer. All except one. Then they got back in the car and set off again. You guys sure are brave, standing so close to something as creepy as that. I gotta be honest, I'm shocked, said one of the guys. Creepy? Don't you think that's a bit cruel? Yeah, what's wrong with laying down some flowers for someone? The flowers were fine. I'm talking about the backpack. Backpack? Yeah, it was next to the flowers. Just sitting there. It was red, like the ones girls use at elementary school. It seemed nobody else had seen what he saw. Hey, quit screwing around. It was right there. You're the one saying weird shit here. There was nothing else there. Huh, I never knew that you could see ghosts. Hey, if I can see ghosts, then that means that ghosts don't exist, because I've never seen one. None of the guys in the car at the time had ever seen a ghost or anything like one. And if I saw it, then it can't have been anything to do with a ghost. But yeah, the rest of us didn't see a thing. You were the only one who saw it. Things in the car grew awkward, and then everyone fell silent. Everyone agreed they should just head straight back to their usual hangout and have another drink or two there. By this point, everyone assumed the conversation regarding the backpack was over and done with. But everyone perked up as they neared the usual apartment they hung out in, and being young men, they discussed all sorts of saucy topics on the way in. But for some reason, the driver didn't stop in the parking lot. He kept going, driving right past it. Hey, what are you doing? Your house is back there, man. We can't. My place is no good. Huh? What on earth are you talking about? The backpack. The what now? There was a girl with a backpack, standing in the parking lot. At that, a chill washed over everyone. According to the driver, a girl with a red backpack and a bob haircut was standing beneath the light at the end of the parking lot. What made things even creepier was that the driver wasn't the same person who saw the backpack earlier that night either. And again, this time, the driver was the only person who saw the girl. "Nah, you were just seeing things. I didn't see anything this time."
"You're fine. You don't have much to worry about. You just saw the backpack, right? Well, I saw the girl too."
"Let's go back and check, yeah? We can't drive around here forever." And so, they decided to turn back and check the parking lot one more time.
Nope. She's still there. She's facing the other way with her head down.
Again, nobody else could see her except the driver, but they were all so unnerved that nobody could get out of the car.
"Well, what else can we do?"
"We'll have to go back to my place, although it's a little small."
"Ah, looks like she's about to turn around. Go, quickly!"
It was just the start of their sleepless night. That's right. No matter where they went, that girl with the backpack was there, waiting for them. But it was only ever one of them who saw her at a time. None of them were able to go home. All of this happened before late-night family restaurants were a thing. There was nowhere for them to go, and so someone suggested that they spend the rest of the night out in the lab at school. "Okay, but what are we gonna do if we see that backpack the moment the elevator doors open?" someone asked. And just like that, the idea was nixed. Every single one of them was on the brink of panic, and their final choice of shelter was my house. They guessed when I'd finish work and showed up to pick me up.
"Hey, let's play Mahjong tonight," they said without explaining anything and forced me back home with them.
When we reached the parking lot, they all pestered me at once.
"Hey, do you see anything strange out there? Like a red backpack, maybe?"
"Huh? I don't see anything but cars."
"Oh, thank God," they all muttered. And then we went up to my room. The toilet was right by the door, which they were also thankful for.
It was obvious to me that they didn't want to be alone, but of course I had no idea what was going on. So I asked them. They explained everything that had gone on while we played Mahjong. I was pretty serious about beating them too, you know. As we played, I could tell they were all frightened of something. Even I started to tremble as they explained what happened.
"You didn't pray, so I think things will probably be okay."
The word "probably" was a bit much. Honestly, they were being a nuisance. But that red backpack didn't make its appearance at my apartment. The next morning, everyone had passed out from fear and exhaustion. They must have been mentally drained. I was the only one who went to school that morning. The rest showed up in their own time that afternoon, and then they were finally able to go back to their places that night. But there was one guy who didn't show up to school at all. The guy who had first seen the backpack. Cell phones weren't that common at that time, so although we were worried about him, we had no way to contact him. As the day ended, all of us agreed to go visit his house together. We rang the doorbell when we got there, and his haggard face greeted us. According to him, he'd been getting ready to go to school, but when he looked outside, he noticed that girl with the backpack was standing there, looking up at his apartment. So he couldn't go outside. He could no longer see her, but he was still too afraid to leave the house. At that moment, one of the other guys suddenly screamed. That was when we realized that the little girl with the red backpack was still with us. We all slowly stepped outside without looking into the house and then locked the door.
I asked about it when we got back into the car, and apparently one of the guys just suddenly noticed her standing in the corner of the room. The rest of us nearly burst into tears. We went to get cleansed shortly thereafter, but the priest told us that we weren't being haunted by anything. The other guys apparently continued to see the little girl on and off for the next few months, but she never caused them any harm, and before long, they stopped seeing her entirely. We still don't know who she really was, like whether she really died in an accident or not. If she did, then maybe she was trying to tell us something. And if that were the case... Sadness washed over me at the thought. Sadly, the guy who first saw the backpack was a bit of a nervous wreck after that. For a while, he was even afraid of the elementary children passing outside on their way to school. And as for me, I never saw anything, so I still don't know what happened, and I couldn't help but think that maybe it was all some type of mass hysteria or something. Although, I never actually said that to them out loud. We're taking a trip back in time for our next story, all the way back to the beginning of the Showa era. A grandfather in modern times tells his grandson a terrifying tale from his younger days as a fisherman, but it's a tale that also has terrifying links to the present. Find out what happens in Oebisu-san. My grandfather on my father's side turns nearly 90 this year, but even now he's still working as a fisherman. Even now we visit his house in Kyushu at least once a year around Obon, and he takes me out into the ocean to go fishing. This happened during the summer of my 5th grade of elementary school, the first time I visited his house. The two of us got into his boat one morning around 5 a.m. and set out from the harbour to go to his special fishing spot. We reached it about 20 or 30 minutes later, dropped the anchor, made some traps, and then cast our rods. Perhaps because we'd gotten up so early, I soon found myself drowsing off to sleep, so I asked my grandfather, "Can you tell me an interesting story?" He fell deep into thought, and then suddenly, it was like the lights went on. His dark and wrinkled face lit up as he laughed. "How about this one?" When my grandfather was still only around 20 years old, he often went fishing with his father. This was around the start of the Showa era, so around the late 1920s, and they always set out for the ocean in their tiny motorized boat. Yet one day, his father felt a massive pain in his eyes, so he had to go to the hospital, meaning my grandfather had to go out fishing alone. He dropped the anchor once he reached the fishing grounds and set about his usual preparations when he noticed something soft floating in the water, roughly 10 meters from the boat. Squinting to get a better look at it, he realized it was a dead body. These days it would be a big deal if you found a dead body, but because it wasn't so uncommon at the time, there wasn't much fuss. People in that area at the time also called drowned bodies Oebisu-san. The fishermen prayed to the kamisama of bountiful harvests, and so when they found a dead body that they couldn't identify, they would take them back to the village and bury them at a crossroads, building a mound on top of them in commemoration. As such, my grandfather lifted the dead body up onto the left side of his boat. He could barely look at it. The flesh had turned ashen and bloated, and the clothes were ragged as well. Of course, there was no way to tell who it was, either. The only thing he could tell was that it was a man, judging by the clothes and stature. He could hardly continue fishing with a dead body in his boat, so he decided to head back to the harbour. He tried hoisting the anchor back up, but it wouldn't budge. It was too heavy. The ocean floor was sandy in that area, so there was no way it could have gotten stuck on a rock. Finding the situation strange, he stripped down to his loincloth and dove into the water. Something was wrapped around the anchor. As he got closer to it, he finally realized what it was. A woman's hair. The hair of a woman under the water was wrapped around the anchor. She was, of course, dead as well. Her kimono was in tatters, and it was only because of her hair that he could tell that she was a woman. This gave him the creeps, as you might expect, but he couldn't just leave the body there either, so he pulled the woman up to his boat, put her on board as well, and set off for the harbour.
"Wow! Got yourself a big catch there," the other fishermen joked when they saw him. But they went around town asking if anyone had seen either of them before. In the end, they couldn't find anyone who knew them, and so my grandfather decided to bury the two of them as Oebisu-san with the rest of his family at a crossroads. As they were removing the clothes from the male body, they found a thin, tiny metal box on the man, and inside of that was a pristine scrap of paper. It appeared the man had jumped into the water in a lover's suicide. The piece of paper detailed the man's feelings towards his partner with comments such as, "I love you," "let's be together even in our next life," and other such things that made my grandfather embarrassed to read it. Then they noticed one more thing. Both the man and the woman had a tattoo at the base of their necks. They were exactly the same. A tattoo of a rose. Does that mean? After discussing it with his family, my grandfather buried the two bodies together and put a mound over the top of them. The good holes dried up shortly thereafter, but my grandfather's wife, meaning my grandmother, soon found out she was pregnant, so everyone was overjoyed. They chalked that up to the Oebisu-san as well, and for a while continued visiting their mound to pray for them. After hearing his story, my first thought was that it was rather strange and somewhat scary. "Well, scary, right?" He laughed and his entire face became even more wrinkled. As the sky got brighter, we returned to the harbour. When we got back home, both of us stood before the family altar in Kamidana and prayed, giving our thanks for our safe return. That was when I suddenly noticed something. There was a photo behind that of my great-grandparents in the family altar, that of a young girl with a bob haircut. "Who's that?" I asked. "My daughter," my grandfather answered. "Huh? I'd never once heard about my father having any siblings." Seeing the confused look on my face, my grandfather continued. "This girl was your father's twin sister. Both your father and her had a large mole on the back of their necks." Then he suddenly laughed. I checked with my father about it later, and he said that her name was Kana. She died of illness before she turned 10. I nervously asked him about the mole on the back of his neck, and he said, "Oh yeah. Come to think of it, I do have one. But we're twins, so of course we both had the same thing." Sure, it wouldn't be that strange for twins to have a mole in the same place, but after hearing my grandfather's story, it creeped me out. Grabbing a torch, I snuck out of the house that night to check the mound my grandfather had spoken of. There was a large stone there that had been worn down by the weather, and in the torchlight, I saw two names engraved on it. I couldn't read them very clearly, but one of them was my father's name, Seiji, and the other was his dead sister, Kana. In the end, I was so scared that I never spoke to my father or grandfather about it again. I still return to his house for Obon, even now, and when I do, I always find myself in front of that stone, like it summoned me there. So I always make sure to put my hands together in prayer. Jikobukken, or properties with a history, aren't all that common, but they're not particularly rare either. In this next story, a real estate agent keeps getting angry phone calls from a new tenant who is convinced something happened in their apartment before they moved in, despite there being no information about this available anywhere. Find out why in Did Something Happen Here? This happened when I was working for a real estate company. We received a call from a tenant who had moved into their apartment only 1 month earlier. Did something happen in this apartment before I moved in? No, nothing, I replied after looking into it. But a few days later, we got another call from the same tenant. Are you really sure that nothing happened here? One of my senior colleagues looked into it again, just in case, but we couldn't find anything and informed the tenant as such. A few days later, we got yet another phone call. Please come out and see for yourself. Something definitely happened here. Next time I'm in the area, if I have time, I'll drop by, I said. But I honestly just thought that the tenant was an incessant complainer by that point. A few days later, we got yet another call. Only this time, the tenant was pissed. You said you would come out and look! Considering how angry the tenant was, I asked for more details of what was going on. Apparently, when they used the bathroom, they continually felt cold, even in hot water. I figured things would only get worse unless we did something, so we agreed on a time for me to go out and take a look at it. I looked into the history of the apartment before going, but I still couldn't find anything. Thank you for coming out here when you're so busy, the tenant said when I arrived on the day. Excuse me, thank you, I said as I walked inside. Maybe the tenant wasn't such a bad person after all. After investigating the premises, including the closets and other various locations, I informed the tenant that I couldn't find anything wrong. I'm telling you, it's in the bathroom, the tenant said. The moment I stepped inside, a chill washed over me. The window wasn't open, nor was the ventilation fan going. It was a modular bathroom, so the only place I could check was the access hole in the roof. I slid it aside and then screamed. To go off track for a moment, but if you live in an apartment with a modular bathroom, why don't you check the access hole at least once yourself as well? What I found was several neckties tied to the pipes in the gap between the floors, forming a hole as though waiting for someone to put their head through it. It was the perfect height to stand on the edge of the bathtub and put your head through. At any rate, I removed all the ties and then disposed of them in the garbage outside. We never received another phone call from that tenant again. It's unconfirmed, but I later heard that the previous tenant may have committed suicide in that apartment. And that same tenant I dealt with also disappeared roughly 6 months later, leaving all of their stuff behind. When I went to visit them to discuss their unpaid rent, I realized exactly which apartment it was. This particular building is just one of several buildings in a row that all look the same, and several years ago, someone burnt themselves to death in another of the buildings as well. I don't know whether these incidents are related or not, but both apartments happen to share the exact same number. People often say, especially in Japan, that children are more easily able to see ghosts. So, if your daughter tells you she's seen something strange in the living room, maybe you best listen to her. This one's called, Are Ghosts Real? This is a story about a ghost that resides in my house. This evening, I went to pick up my 6-year-old daughter from preschool. On the drive home, she asked me something.
Hey, are ghosts and monsters real?
No, they're not. There's no such thing as monsters. They're just made-up stories or people seeing things when they get sleepy, I said, giving her the usual answer. Yet she continued.
But I saw one at home.
When? Where?
Last night, in the room where we ate dinner, by the ABC paper on the wall.
What kind of monster was it?
It was round, like white smoke. Its face was scary.
Are you sure it wasn't a dream?
It wasn't.
You must have just been sleepy and saw something that wasn't there, I said, trying to convince her otherwise, but I broke out in goosebumps. So I hadn't been seeing things then. It happened 6 years earlier, in August. My wife was getting ready to give birth the following month, so she'd gone back home to her family house. I was all alone in our 3-bedroom apartment, and late one night, I saw something in the same spot my daughter said that she saw the monster. It looked like a large, soft, white beach ball with black spots for eyes and a nose, and it had a mouth as well. Now, I don't believe in ghosts or anything like that, and I thought that if one ever appeared before me, there was no way I'd give in to it. So, several seconds after seeing it there, I ran and kicked it away. It felt kind of soft, I think, but I don't really remember it well. The biggest shock was the large hole it left in the wall behind it after I kicked it. Ignoring the fact that it might have been a monster of some sort, I stayed up all night figuring out how to cover up the hole. These days, all traces of that large hole are covered by my daughter's alphabet posters. Of course, when my wife returned home after giving birth, she immediately noticed the hole in the wall. My emergency measures were, of course, not very good, and over time we covered that spot with calendars and other things, including the current alphabet posters. But as for the monster, my daughter says that she apparently saw it after waking up during the night. She stared at it in surprise, and then it apparently disappeared into the wall, like getting sucked in. Maybe I kicked it into that wall 6 years ago. But still, the fact that my daughter didn't cry after seeing such a thing is rather impressive. Kotatsu. I miss my kotatsu. But do you really know what's hidden under that heated table at any time? There might be something unexpected lurking in that delightful warmth. Find out why in Owashi. This story is about a kamisama called Owashi. When my father was just a kid, he was apparently looked after by one of his female relatives. This relative was still in high school, but because of circumstances at home, she was staying at my dad's house while she went to school. Dad's house was involved in trade at the time, which meant numerous young men were staying there as well, and one of them, I'll call him Shimizu-san, seemed to get along with that relative really well. One day, the two of them were sitting beneath the heated kotatsu table. Yet, before long, Shimizu-san's face turned pale. He got up, went upstairs, and the moment he got there, suddenly screamed. He was normally such a quiet guy, so my grandfather and the rest of the family ran upstairs to check on him. They found him unconscious and foaming at the mouth. His eyes had rolled back into his head, and my father panicked, thinking he was dead. Shimizu-san didn't wake up again that day, but my father went to bed while my grandparents took care of the ill man. Apparently, the female relative went to bed as well. Shimizu-san was up when they awoke the next morning, so they asked him, what happened? He hesitated, clearly not wanting to speak, but they eventually coaxed it out of him. The day before, when he'd been sitting under the heated table, he felt a leg bumping constantly into his knees. At first, it was just a bump, but before long, it started to feel like the leg was rubbing his knees and thighs. Of course, things had been going well with that girl, so at first, he thought it was her. Excited and nervous, he tried touching the leg, but he quickly realized it was covered in thick hair and densely muscled, like a man. Surprised, he looked over at the girl and she blushed, so he thought it was her leg, but her leg was like that of a man's. But unsatisfied with that answer, he touched it again. Before long, the girl stepped out from beneath the table. But the other leg was still there. Confused, he lifted the blanket covering the table, but there was nothing beneath it. At that same time, he started to feel ill, so he figured he'd go upstairs to go to bed. But as he lay in bed, trembling, it wasn't long until he felt that same leg touching him again. He jumped out of bed and started jumping on the blankets. Then a man's muscular leg, covered in thick black hair, tumbled out of the bed and rolled around, jerking like a thumb. He distinctly remembered something like a blister on the back of the leg. He screamed, and by the time he regained consciousness, it was morning. Shimizu-san continued working at my dad's house for a while after that, but every now and then his screams woke the house up during the night. It seemed that getting under anything that had a blanket, like a heated table or a bed, terrified him, and his mental state started to degrade. In the end, they apparently sent him home. The female relative who cared for my dad while the rest of the family worked apparently said about the matter that it must have been Owashi. Yet she didn't seem scared of it at all. Apparently it was a kami-sama that was spoken of a lot in the Tohoku region, although I forget from where exactly. She was also from that region. As time passed, she eventually moved out of their house too, and my father never saw her again. We don't know what she's doing these days, so there's no way to confirm the finer details of the story with her, sadly. The salesman in this next story finds himself in a new area to go knocking door to door, but one house in particular on his map is crossed out and black. It seems abandoned when he gets there, and yet, before he's able to leave, he hears a voice coming from the inside. Who, or what, could it be? Find out in Walk-in Sales. One day at my previous job, I was working in a different branch office to usual, walking around with a map in hand as I did my walk-in sales. As I reached my destination and started walking, I noticed I had stopped near a single house that was scribbled out with black ink on the map. Hmm? Is someone there? It was an old house and the curtains were closed, yet for some reason I could sense someone, or something, on the other side. Hello? I called out from the front door, but there was no response. Figuring nobody would answer, I turned around to leave when I suddenly heard a voice calling out from inside the house. What do you want? It was the voice of an old woman. I panicked and turned back, but the woman continued the conversation through the closed door. Ma'am, would you mind opening the door?
I can't. I'm not strong enough.
Also, don't you find it strange talking to me? Aren't you afraid? No, not really. Do you live alone, ma'am?
No, I don't live here.
Eh? Are you just passing through?
No, that's not it. I used to stay here with the old man long ago, but he's gone somewhere far away now. I'd like to go too, but I can't do anything by myself.
Well, would you like me to go and say something to the person who locked the door?
You should visit Nani Nani-san. They live nearby. Is that okay?
Well, you want to leave, right?
Yes, I don't want to be alone any longer. Well then, please.
I went to the house she told me, and before I even had the chance to open my mouth, the man beat me to it.
Did you visit that house? Nobody is supposed to be there.
But was somebody there? I told him about the conversation I'd just had with the old woman. His face grew taut with tension as he listened.
I see. I'll go over later and open the door. By the way, are you able to see ghosts? He asked me.
No, not at all. I've never seen one before, I answered with a smile.
Not even once?
What a strange power, the man said. It was still around lunchtime by the time I returned to the office, and when I told them about what happened, there was a big fuss.
Now you've gone and done it.
By the way, it wasn't until 10 years later that I learnt that the old woman inside the house was actually a ghost.
If you'd like to chat about this week's stories, don't forget to join us in the Koabana Discord. You can find that link in the description or on koabana.net. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TaraA Devlin for exclusive bonus stories and extras, or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/KoabanaJapan for all sorts of Japanese horror you won't find anywhere else. Thanks, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you again next time for even more Koabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet.
Want even more scary stories? Head over to koabana.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koabana.net now.